Ladies and gentlemen, I've been sitting at this desk for 20 years, and I can never remember a moment like that. From the assault on Roman Reigns to tipping over the ambulance with Reigns inside. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. Shocking.
And now, for live reaction, we join this Periscope feed already in progress from a member of the Roman Empire.
All I care about is
Roman's
well-being. And
Roman,
all I want is for you to get well. That's all I want. And what really bothers me is to think of those people out there who don't see
him
as a person. Get well,
Roman.
The world needs to know that
Roman
still has
his
fans.
He does.
I love you,
Roman.
Just know that, okay? Just know that. And how
freaking
dare anyone out there make fun of
Roman
after all
he's
been through? Leave
him
alone. Leave
Roman Reigns
alone right now. I mean it. Anyone who has a problem with
him,
you deal with me. Because
he's
not well right now. You're lucky
he
even performed for you bastards. Leave
Roman
alone.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
You fat! You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Ah, happy Easter Sunday. Even to all the salty members of the Roman Empire who got their tighty-whities in a bunch this week. The ones who wear underwear. It's going to be one of those shows, guys. I'm letting you know right now. They got me all riled up, so we're going to have some fun with them. I'll explain later on, but first, this is episode 491 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off for April 14th, 2017. I am the Solid Monster. Oh, what's that, Mr. Mizanin?
Solid Monster Sounds Off.
What was that? I couldn't hear you the first time.
Solid Monster Sound Off.
There you go. Shout out to Sun Goshuaku. He's a fan of the podcast. You have achieved legend status here on the Sound Off. He got the Miz's dad, George Mizanin, on video at WrestleMania 33. How he tracked him down, 65,000 people, I don't know. But he got him on video, giving a quick plug there for the Sound Off. He looks so proud, too, if you watch the video, like when he does it. Even though he clearly has no idea what he's talking about. But that's awesome. You know, that reminds me of Grammar Girl. She's the one you hear at the end of every Sound Off. That was from the Stitcher Awards 4 years ago. I love how she said the name of the show in the form of a question as she was reading the names of the nominees. Like she wasn't sure. But I became an instant fan of Miz's dad the moment I saw him on Raw in the front row laughing while Randy Orton kicked his son's ass right in front of him. I think he even said himself that that was hilarious. On that video they did on YouTube, My Son is a WWE Superstar, where they interviewed his parents, I think he said that moment was quite hilarious. So yeah, the man is a legend. And you can get a shout out too, by the way, if you get somebody like Miz Dad to show some love for the podcast on audio or video. You guys have been killing it this month with our Audible trial. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster is the link. You can get the brand new AJ Lee book, Crazy Is My Superpower, free by signing up for a 30-day trial of the Audible service using our link. This here comes from Adam Johnson on Twitter. He sent this to me. Can recommend AJ's book. I'm about one-third of the way in so far. And even without the wrestling career stuff, it is really captivating stuff. So that comes from Adam. A lot of you have had some great things to say about the book. So if you want to get your copy for free on me, you can use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. All you got to do is go through the sign-up process. Try it out for 30 days or less. If it's not for you, if you're not happy with it, you can cancel and you get to keep your one free audio book. And so the AJ Lee book is there if you want to cash in on that one. There's tons of other books. It does not have to be the AJ book, but it's getting pretty good reviews, so I would definitely check that one out. But you also got Bob Holly's book and Daniel Bryan's and The Death of WCW and a bunch of others. So support the podcast. Use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Become a PayPal VIP if you like what you hear. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on the show, which is listened to all over the world. I want to say thank you. We got another big roll call this week, and I very much appreciate that. Thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez. It would not be a sound-off without his name in there, as it would not be if it wasn't for Deadpool James Herrera. Chuck Lunatic Lentz, haven't heard from the Lunatic in a while. Beast Mode, Brock Joseph. Out of Control, Cody Thomas. Luis Hercules Hernandez. Sean Nasty Boy Nilsson. Damn Straight Michael Dorsey. Scott the Stump Woodford. Roman Nightmare Uha. Or Ota. I was a little fuzzy on that last name there, but haven't heard from Roman in a while. Mass Grave, Micah Harshaw. Micah sent me a very nice email this week that I appreciated, so thank you to him. Raymond the Mountie Medina, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, The Demon of the Prairies, Scott Silbernagel, The Prince of Pleasantville, Anelio Crockett, The Brooklyn Bombers, Jamel and Isaiah Walker, Luis the Belmont Sentinel Alejandro. That is the Luis from our Facebook group, so thank you, Luis. Thomas the Promise Murphy, Joe Hand Grenade Herrera, Strongman Steven Burton, Smash Mouth Thomas Cochran, Critical Condition Kevin Smith, The Real Rock and Rolla Ryan Hodge, Vicious Vincent Cooper, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter, The Bruiser, Kieran O'Reilly, The Belgian Brute Nicholas Overmeer, Codebreaker Christopher Tominey, Superbad Soraya Allen, Chris the Crusher Adams, Claire, Noah, and Molly love you very much. And congrats on the upcoming nuptials next year as well. And finally here, Eric Chapman, thank you very much, and Josh O'Neill. And also, shout out to the Toshak family in Edinburgh and their new son Cameron, little Cam Cam Bigelow as they call him, who was 11 days overdue. This little guy didn't want to come out. I can't even imagine what that would feel like. Just, I mean, to have a human being inside you anyway, but to, you know, have a due date and then the due date comes and goes and you've got this person inside you who just doesn't want to come out. That's got to be rough. I thankfully have not had that problem before. Although I kind of did once after some bad Wendy's. I kind of had a similar feeling. It didn't want to come out. But anyway, I also want to say thank you to Don Tony and Kevin Castle of the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show for their kind words on their podcast last week. Someone sent me a clip. They were talking about the interview I did with the Headbangers for Fight TV back at WrestleCon. They had some very nice things to say about me, and I just wanted to say how much I appreciated that. That was very nice of them to do. I bought Justin Roberts' new book. I'm looking forward to starting it because it sounds like he's got some interesting stories in there about the inner workings of WWE, kind of the good and the bad. I know he did one of these AMAs on Reddit, I think about a week ago, and he had some unflattering things to say when asked about Kevin Dunn. So anyway, I'll let you know once I'm done with it. Now, I'm sure I'll do a review, whether it's just something quick here on the podcast or maybe something more extensive as an extra on YouTube. Or will it be on YouTube? That's a nice segue into something else I want to mention here. It has come to my attention that YouTube has started demonetizing all wrestling-related content and classifying them as restricted content. And that includes some WWE content on their own channel. That channel has 15 million subscribers. But apparently it's affecting them as well. Also, if you're using YouTube in restricted mode, you can no longer see any of the videos. That goes for most wrestling videos. That goes for all but one video on my YouTube channel. There are videos that slip through, even on my channel. I switched to restricted mode in my browser. If you go to the very bottom of the page, you'll see something that says restricted mode off and on. And when I flip it to on, lo and behold, I have exactly one video that shows up for my entire channel, which oddly enough is the interview I did from WrestleCon with Demolition 2 weeks ago. So apparently that's okay, I guess, but my interview with Jimmy Hart is not, and Mean Gene Okerlund, I don't get it. I really don't get it. And nothing else even, again, nothing else even shows up of all the videos on my channel. It doesn't even show. And also, when I check my videos, no ads are playing. So this is affecting everybody. Lots of other wrestling content creators, independent promotions. I saw Beyond Wrestling and AIW tweeting about it. And many of them rely on that ad revenue as a source of income. Not their sole source of income, but an important source nonetheless. It's just terrible. And this all stems from a big advertiser boycott of YouTube. You got big companies like GM and Walmart and Pepsi and Starbucks who have pulled their ads because of questionable content. You know, they don't want their ads associated with said content. That doesn't explain why everything wrestling related is automatically deemed restricted. The whole thing is just ludicrous. So for now, my suggestion to you is just make sure you have restricted mode turned off in your browser. I think it is browser specific, so if you use multiple machines, you may have to change it on each one. But just, you know, turn that off. I don't think that changes the whole issue of demonetizing people's videos, but at least the videos will show up. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to stop putting stuff on YouTube because of that, so I certainly want to make sure people are at least seeing it. Now, thankfully, this podcast, you know, my main show, is not YouTube-based, and I have a lot of reasons for that. You know, I put bonus content up on the Sound Off channel. Now, it does provide a nice little source of income that apparently may be going away now. I don't know. I guess I'll find out soon enough. But, you know, you guys have been awesome with the PayPal stuff and using the Audible link, and I thank you for that. And as long as you keep doing that, then that's awesome. The ones, though, that I really, like, feel bad for are the people who push all of their content out to YouTube. I mean, there are guys out there, you know, Joe Cronin and JD from New York and Brian Zane, who does his Wrestling with Regret channel. And then there's even bigger channels out there. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff out there. And guys that are pumping out content multiple times a week, if not in some cases on a daily basis, those are the people who are going to get really screwed over by this. And again, I think for now, the best thing to do is just, you know, I guess if there's a way to make your voice heard, reach out to YouTube and let them know you're not happy about that. This is more, though, of a content creator issue, I think, where kind of on our end, we have to reach out to YouTube and figure out what the hell's going on here. But for now, the best thing to do is just make sure restricted mode on YouTube is turned off in your browser. Beyond Wrestling did reach out to YouTube, and the response they basically got was, we're aware of the issue, we are working to see what we can do, and it is definitely on our radar. So that is at least a little bit encouraging, the fact that they didn't just outright ignore them or say, this is the change that we made, and unfortunately, blah, blah, blah. They're at least acting as if they're trying to find some kind of a resolution, and they are definitely aware of the issue. So it does help to reach out, I guess, and make your voices heard. So fingers crossed, hopefully it works out, because if not, there's a lot of people that are going to get hit very hard by this. This past week was WWE's Superstar Shakeup that they made a very big deal of. Not a draft. It's a Superstar Shakeup. Guys and girls moving back and forth between Raw and SmackDown, freshening the rosters up a bit. So let's talk about this shakeup here. Let's talk about Monday Night Raw first. Who did Monday Night Raw end up getting? Monday Night Raw is now the home of the Intercontinental Champion Dean Ambrose. He was the first one, as we found out. Actually, not the first one. Miz and Maryse were the first ones out on TV Monday night. Ambrose came out. They did a segment at the beginning. So Dean Ambrose has taken the IC title to Raw. Miz and Maryse are now officially on Monday Night Raw. Bray Wyatt, who popped up on the Tron to interact with Finn Balor, he is now on Raw, even though he's in the middle of a WWE Championship feud with Randy Orton. Alexa Bliss, now a member of the Raw roster, as is Mickey James, Apollo Crews, and Kalisto, who I would assume are just happy to be away from Dolph Ziggler so they don't have to get their brains bashed in with a steel chair every week. Heat Slater and Rhino are now officially members of the Raw roster, as is Kurt Hawkins and The Drifter from NXT, Elias Samson. He was literally drifting around during the show on Monday night. And David Otunga, who replaces Byron Saxton on commentary. However, this comes from WWE.com. SmackDown Live's David Otunga moved to the Raw announce desk in the Superstar Shakeup, but the former tag team champion's debut alongside Michael Cole and Corey Graves will be delayed for 6 weeks, as he has been cast as the lead of a new action franchise. Otunga's latest film endeavor leaves a temporary vacancy on the Raw commentary team. Who will serve as his replacement? And then a few days later, we got our answer that Booker T will replace him on headset for the next 6 weeks. So those were the Raw moves. SmackDown Live made some moves of their own. Maybe the biggest being Kevin Owens and the United States Championship, now a part of SmackDown. So they have swapped the two secondary titles. Owens goes to SmackDown. He apparently left his beard on Raw. And now Owens is still defending the U.S. title against Chris Jericho at the next Raw pay-per-view. That's Payback coming up on April 30th. The winner, my understanding, is the winner of that match will then go to SmackDown Live with the U.S. title. So it is still possible that Kevin Owens could stay on Raw. I assume that means Owens is not going to also be on SmackDown, and they end up picking up two people if Jericho happens to win the championship. So it could very well be Chris Jericho as the one ultimately going to SmackDown, although I think Owens is just going to win again. I don't foresee Jericho winning that title back. Sami Zayn. I'm very surprised that they drafted him and Kevin Owens on the same show again. I was surprised they didn't split them up in the draft last year. I thought for sure that they were going to send Sami or one of them to SmackDown and keep the other one on Raw. But no, they moved Sami over to the same brand, so I guess these two really are destined to do this forever. The New Day is coming to SmackDown, maybe not until Kofi is ready to come back. Kofi Kingston had ankle surgery this past week. I think he's supposed to be out about 6 to 8 weeks. So they ran a vignette saying the New Day is coming soon. Rusev and Lana, individually, on their way to SmackDown Live. Lana got a coming soon graphic. They've got apparently some sort of an idea for her, and it sure looks like they're going to be separating the two of them. We won't know until we see both of them on TV. Rusev is still out recovering, I think, from shoulder surgery. But it looks like a lock. She's probably going to be wrestling soon. I know Lana's been training for a while. We have yet to see her work a match or a singles match anyway on TV. So I guess we'll see what they do. At least they drafted them to the same brand. The same cannot be said for Dean Ambrose and Renee Young. I'll talk about that in a second. Charlotte, in the worst-kept secret, now a part of the SmackDown roster. This was all but guaranteed, right? I mean, especially after she lost again on Raw Monday night. Tamina is back. So they kept one Samoan on Raw with Nia Jax, and I guess they kept the other one on SmackDown, because I believe Tamina was originally a member of the SmackDown roster. She's been out, though, with, I think she had reconstructive knee surgery, I believe. Primo and Epico, who apparently are no longer travel agents. They are now members of the SmackDown roster, as is Jinder Mahal, Sin Cara, and with David Otunga going to Raw, Byron Saxton joins the SmackDown announce crew with Tom Phillips and JBL. I'm sure Byron must be thrilled to go from working with Corey Graves to working with JBL. So I didn't do too badly with my picks. I had Miz and Maryse, Alexa Bliss, and Mickey James all going to Raw, which they did. And I had New Day, Charlotte, Sami Zayn, and Rusev all going to SmackDown, which they did. So about a 500 batting average on each show, which is not terrible. I wanted Finn Balor, Karl Anderson, and Luke Gallows on SmackDown. That's really what I wanted. We're getting them on Raw instead, so at least that crew is being kept together. I wanted AJ Styles kept right where he was on SmackDown Live, and he stayed put, which is, I think, the best move to make. They moved Bray Wyatt to Raw, which I did not see coming. It's good, though, because it means that this House of Horrors match with him and Randy Orton on the next pay-per-view will finally be the end of their feud. That's the good news. The bad news is they didn't move Eric Rowan with him, which means Rowan will be dead probably within weeks. He ain't going anywhere without Bray Wyatt. I'm not quite sure why they would do that. He just came back, too. That's the thing that's so bizarre about this. I mean, the Bray Wyatt thing, I don't know how much, you know, forethought was really put into that, because Eric Rowan had been out with an injury himself for a number of months. He literally, just last week, came back to TV and was aligned with Bray Wyatt. And now, a week later, they split them up again. It's like, okay, I mean, Bray will do his thing. I'm sure Bray will be fine, but, you know, for Rowan, this doesn't do him any favors at all, unless they just go ahead and reunite him with Luke Harper, who also is sort of an island unto himself. I'm very disappointed that they really haven't done much with Harper. I guess they could just put them back together and make them a tag team. SmackDown could use more of those, but I think it's a step back for Luke Harper. I mean, how many times have we seen that? I'm ready for Luke Harper to get a serious singles push and see how far he can go. I don't want to see him just thrown back together with Eric Rowan, but they may have no choice. So I guess we'll see what they do with Rowan. But the interesting thing about Bray is now back on the same show with his brother Bo. And it's not as though they've been doing anything with Bo Dallas. He kind of got a renewed push for a while where they put him back on TV. He had new gear. He had the singlet. He'd come out there with the giant sign, Bo Leave. And for like a couple of weeks, they gave him some wins. It was like, huh, this is interesting, even though I knew it wasn't going anywhere. And of course it didn't. And I now am intrigued by the possibility of them perhaps, maybe, possibly, making Bo Dallas a member of some new Wyatt family. Because I do still think that Bray having a family is the way to go, instead of him just kind of doing the solo thing. And to build a new family is fine, even though, again, I don't really get splitting him from Rowan. But it would give Bo Dallas something to do, and I'm sure the two of them would probably love to work together. And last I saw Bo, he was already growing a beard. It probably wouldn't be too difficult for him to grow out a nice bushy beard and kind of have him fall under the spell of his brother and maybe even acknowledge the fact on TV that the two of them are related. Could be interesting. You know? That's why I would have moved Rowan over too. Right there, you got three guys. You can have Bray, Bo, and Rowan. And you can always expand to a fourth member at some point. So that would be one suggestion I would make. Do something with Bray and Bo. Bo could be, and I know I pitched that idea before. Long, long time ago. But Bo kind of being this, I don't know, the savant or whatever, the servant of Bray Wyatt, maybe in a way similar to what Stevie Richards used to be to Raven in WCW, if you guys remember that. Hopefully they'll think about that. Now, I saw a rumor that was going around online. It was on social media. I don't know how much credence there is to it. I assume very little. That Bray Wyatt is going to win the WWE Championship from Randy Orton at Payback, so that Raw now has a world title that can be defended while Brock Lesnar is gone hunting and just being Brock. First of all, that makes no sense, okay? Because you're robbing Peter to pay Paul in a way, right? You're taking the championship, the main championship, off one brand, put it on the other brand. So now, I mean, I guess it would elevate the U.S. title, but again, it makes no sense. You know, if you did that, Raw would then have the Universal title, which could at least be defended every few months. They would have the WWE title, they would have the Intercontinental title, they would have the Cruiserweight title, and their own tag team and women's titles. That ain't happening. More likely, I would say, if last Monday was any indication, with Dean Ambrose being in the main event, it's that in Brock's absence, the Intercontinental title will be elevated. And that may not be such a bad thing. The other thing to come out of this shakeup is that all three members of The Shield find themselves reunited now on the same brand, which I'm sure will start up the rumor mill of a Shield reunion, which I would not mind, by the way. I would not be against it if, say, it meant The Shield feuding at some point down the road with The Club, Balor and Gallows and Anderson. Honestly, reuniting The Shield and doing something like that would probably benefit Roman Reigns more than anyone else. It's probably in WWE's best interest to do some sort of a short-lived Shield reunion, because it would help their boy. Speaking of Dean Ambrose, he and Renee Young were apparently secretly married this past week. Kevin Owens brought it up on Talking Smack. Dolph Ziggler also kind of mentioned it briefly on Talking Smack, and they were not getting into it. Shane McMahon was on the show with Daniel Bryan and Renee Young. He was trying to steer the conversation as far away from that as possible. Renee looked uncomfortable. She didn't want to talk about it. Kevin Owens at first wouldn't let it go. He's like, oh, I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to talk about it. And Shane was like, yeah, I don't think we're going there. So, and then after that, I guess she had no choice. The next day, Renee went on Twitter and she just posted a very kind of vague tweet saying, marriage is nice. She didn't say I'm married, but she said, oh, marriage is nice. Thank you to everyone. So, yeah. And I guess they had rings on their fingers. I didn't even notice on Monday night. So, but then WWE.com has since gone and did a whole story on it. They talked about the rumors of them getting married. I laughed my ass off. Like, even though these two people work for the company, and they could just ask them. You have their own website. The rumors of them getting married. It's like, really? Okay, well, you could always go to the source and find out, you know. But congrats to the both of them. I like how they get married, and then immediately after, Dean is drafted to a different brand. And I'd like to think that this time they didn't do that on purpose. It was just, hey, we need to make this move. We need the Intercontinental title on Raw, so Dean happens to be the Intercontinental champion. I would hope there was no malice or specific attention given to the fact that, hey, these two got married, let's split them up here. And I've had people say, well, Renee's on Raw anyway. She does Raw Talk. I don't watch Raw Talk. I watch Talking Smack, so it's possible that you're right. The one time I watched Raw Talk, they had Charlie Caruso with Jerry Lawler. So if they've changed that and now Renee Young does it, then I guess I'm wrong. But my understanding is that that's Charlie's gig, and Talking Smack is Renee's gig. I mean, it's possible Renee goes on the road with Raw anyway, if they need her. But my understanding is she is with SmackDown, and now her husband, presumed husband, is with Raw. So if they are split up, that's kind of shitty. I was not a fan of the format. Let's talk about the format of this whole shakeup they did. Not a fan of how they did this. People just randomly showing up. I mean, it's nice to have a surprise here and there, but I just thought the whole thing was very lazily done. I really don't know why they didn't just have a full draft and have both GMs on TV doing segments together. I think it would have been very entertaining to see Kurt Angle and Daniel Bryan for the very first time sharing the screen together. And maybe even doing, you know, some humorous stuff. Maybe do some matches to determine draft picks and whatnot. Make the matches on Monday and Tuesday feel like they actually had something on the line. We've seen them do that in years past. There's lots of different ways that they could have gone with this. I'm sure you guys have a million ideas too. And I just feel like they chose the path of least resistance here. They chose the easy way out. And I just thought it was very lazily done. I also can't believe that there was no blow-off of any kind or final interaction between Miz and Daniel Bryan. These guys have been feuding on television for months and months and months. It actually made for some of the most compelling segments on TV on any WWE show. That Talking Smack stuff was awesome, and I've talked about it here on the podcast. I've praised it. And Miz here just shows up on Raw, and that's it. Over. Done. No last word from Bryan. I mean, Bryan made a little dig on Talking Smack on Tuesday about being happy Miz isn't around anymore, but it's like, that's it? Like, I know they were never going to have a match, but like, if he was there, if Bryan was there on Monday, which he was not, you know, he could be like, you know, you may not work for me anymore. You could have them in the ring together, face to face. You know, it probably would have been a hot segment, and he could say something along the lines of, you're right, you know, you don't work for me anymore, you're now a Raw guy, but Kurt Angle was kind enough to grant me one request. You know, and like Brock Lesnar comes out and suplexes the shit out of him, or you know, he books him against Ambrose in the main event with some kind of a crazy no DQ match that like benefits Dean Ambrose. You know what I mean? Like Bryan's final revenge for all those times Miz mocked the fact that he can't wrestle anymore, or Miz mimicking all of his moves and his kicks, which he's still doing, by the way. It just felt like there was no thought at all put into any of this stuff. And that was one of those things that just made me go, man, after all these months, that's it. It's like, that's just the way it ends. It's very anticlimactic. So, with the superstar shakeup now settled, I put a poll up on Twitter. Which brand came out the winner That's what I asked you guys. Was it Monday Night Raw or was it SmackDown Live? Who came out with the better roster? Who had the better moves overall? Was there a clear-cut winner? Was it more, you know, 50-50? Well, not according to you guys. 38% of you said Raw was the winner. 62% of you said SmackDown Live was the winner. Let me give my feedback now on this. Raw has more big names. There's no debate about that. Raw has Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, Chris Jericho, Bray Wyatt, Braun Strowman, the Hardys. Okay, a clear advantage over SmackDown in terms of name, talent. Plus, Raw has the stronger tag team division, in my opinion. I think Raw has, maybe only by a little bit, but Raw has the stronger women's division. Raw, of course, has the Cruiserweight division, which SmackDown does not have. They have Neville and Austin Aries and all those guys. So, in terms of how the rosters look right now, I have to disagree with those poll results and say that Raw comes out of this looking like the stronger show of the two. But SmackDown is absolutely stronger now than it was before. There's no doubt about that. And here's the one advantage, or one of the advantages, that I feel SmackDown has over Raw. They tend to get the most out of the talent they have. Okay, not everybody. Dolph Ziggler, you could throw his name in there, or an Apollo Crews. He didn't exactly light the world on fire when he was on SmackDown. But generally speaking, I think SmackDown does a better job of that than Raw does, as far as getting the most out of what they have. You know, it's a weird deal because even though the Raw roster looks stronger on paper, I still feel like SmackDown has all the ingredients to make for the superior show every week. And being 2 hours is a little part of that. But I still look at that SmackDown roster and I say this really can be the more entertaining, the more fun of these two shows, better matches, all of that stuff. They can pull it off, and I'm still not sure that Raw can, even though Raw has a lot more kind of, like I said, name brand talent. I still feel SmackDown has the advantage there. And I think keeping AJ Styles on SmackDown was a big part of that. If they had moved AJ, that would have been just a death knell for the show. So they kept AJ, they called up Nakamura. I mean, look, SmackDown is no slouch. They have AJ Styles, they have John Cena when he's actually around, they have Randy Orton, they have Shinsuke Nakamura, they have Kevin Owens, they have Charlotte. But that's pretty impressive. You know, the top of the roster right there is impressive. Sami Zayn, now on SmackDown, he was sort of lost in the shuffle these last few months. Didn't even get a match of his own at WrestleMania. I think Sami Zayn is going to thrive on SmackDown. Here in week number one, he was in the main event. Now, he didn't win, but I would suspect that we're going to see Sami in a lot of main events going forward on TV. You know, not necessarily with the championship anytime soon, but I think he'll be in that upper tier where he'll be featured a hell of a lot more than he was on Monday nights. You know, Rusev is another one. If the heat's died down from the whole engagement thing last year, if that's what caused it, you know, screwing up their storyline plans, if they put that behind them, he could be a money player on that brand. I think either as a babyface or a heel. You know, people remember the SmackDown 6 from all those years ago. I got some questions, for, you know, for the mailbag this week that I didn't include, but they were asking me about, you know, do you think that they now have a modern-day version now of the SmackDown 6 that, you know, WWE had in 2002 and 2003? You know, you've got AJ, you've got Nakamura, Owen, Zayn, and, you know, maybe throw in American Alpha. They can have their own SmackDown 6 if they play their cards right. I mean, they could. Tag team division is kind of weak, but they've got American Alpha, they've got the Usos, they've got the New Day. New Day desperately needed new people to work with, and now they have them. You know, if they actually do something meaningful with Primo and Epico, then maybe in 6 months, say DIY, maybe gets called up from NXT. That's a pretty strong tag team division to have right there. And then they have the Ascension and Breezango, but whatever. That could turn out to be a pretty strong tag team division. I just think right now the tag division probably is their big... Not even probably. The tag team division is their biggest weakness. And Raw has the advantage over them in that respect. Primo and Epico in one night on SmackDown when they made their debut this Tuesday, in one night they made them feel like more of a threat than they had looked like on Raw in maybe forever, maybe since they debuted on Raw with that new gimmick. Okay, and now this is just one week, but if they drop the whole travel agent nonsense, I think that's already a step in the right direction. So I'm very optimistic about SmackDown. I think SmackDown's in fine shape going forward, but I don't see how you can look at these two rosters side by side on paper and say that Raw doesn't look to have the stronger roster. I think Raw definitely has the edge on paper in terms of the names they have, but SmackDown makes the most of what they have, and what they have is not bad. So it'll be fun to follow and see, because people have been lavishing praise now for months on SmackDown. You see the polls every week, 85% thumbs up, 88% thumbs up, and it bothers some people because they feel like, well, they're just voting for SmackDown in protest of Raw. And again, I'm sure it's a minority if people are doing that. People genuinely like SmackDown, or they're less offended by SmackDown than they are Raw most weeks. We'll see if that changes now. I don't know that it will. I don't know that it will, because again, they've got some good talent on there, and SmackDown, I think there's always going to be a motivation. I think whether it's the writers, because I think they have separate writing teams, like there's always going to be that motivation where Raw is the A show, Raw is the flagship. It's Vince McMahon's baby. It always will be. Maybe it just gives the SmackDown crew that little bit of extra motivation to go out there and be better than them. Whatever it is, I think they've been doing a damn good job, and hopefully they keep it up. And Raw, you know, Raw could have used a new paint job. Now they've got some new faces on the show. How are they going to use those faces? We'll see. We got a taste of it on Raw last Monday from Long Island. They were at the Nassau Coliseum last Monday. Twitter poll, over 3,500 votes, which is very high for a Raw poll. 85% voted Braun. There was no thumbs up. It was just Braun. And only 15% thumbs down. So a bit skewed, because I did put Braun's name in there. And Braun Strowman is the sole reason that this show got 85% basically thumbs up here. Because of that tremendous angle with Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns that they did last Monday night. He is single-handedly responsible for that poll result that I just read. So here's what happened. I got to start with this. They promoted a sit-down interview backstage with Michael Cole. Michael Cole is going to sit down with the big dog, Roman Reigns. So Reigns calls his win over The Undertaker bittersweet. I had to do what I had to do, though. It's my yard now. I'm the big dog. Woof, woof, all that shit, right? Then, out of nowhere, Braun Strowman comes and attacks Roman Reigns. He throws him against the ladder, which is up against the wall. He propels him into the air. Reigns crashes through a table. There's a styrofoam food container that lands right on his face, which made me laugh. Then he slams Reigns into a garage door repeatedly, over and over and over again. Gives him a running power slam onto one of those large equipment cases. Then, so Reigns is now on the ground. He's kind of sitting propped up against the wall. Strowman grabs the equipment case and just rams it right into Roman Reigns. Now, at that point, I figured, okay, it's over. That's an injury angle right there. People are cheering. They love what they're seeing. Strowman has now walked off. Roman, it looked like he was bleeding from the mouth. But Strowman wasn't done yet. They loaded Roman onto a stretcher. Braun suddenly reappeared, like Michael Myers in a Halloween movie. He grabs the stretcher with Roman strapped to it. He sends it flying off a loading dock in the back. Now, clearly there was some kind of an edit or a jump cut here to some pre-recorded footage. You could tell that there was no human being strapped to the gurney, maybe like a dummy or something. There was something there, but it wasn't Roman Reigns. Because had it been Roman Reigns, he probably would have been killed. Although, I will say, Zack Ryder was rolled by Kane off the stage once while sitting in a wheelchair. And Zack Ryder took all that bump. There was no stunt double there. So if Zack Ryder can take that bump, you know, Roman Reigns surely could take this one. But anyway, Strowman got an incredible pop for killing this man. Like you would think he was the biggest babyface in the entire company. In fact, I'm not sure this segment did any favors for Roman Reigns. This guy went out there, he gave the fans exactly what they wanted to see. Just all it did was solidify Braun Strowman as the top babyface on Raw, and he still wasn't done. So after they finally load Roman into the ambulance, he reappeared once more. He said, I told you I wasn't done with you yet. Again, big cheers for that from the crowd. He beats up Reigns in the ambulance. He slams the door shut. And then he proceeds to tip the ambulance over with his raw power. Or so we're led to believe. This was so over the top, but so great. This turned the entire show around. The way they handled this shakeup, I thought it was very dull. I thought it was disappointing up until this point. But this woke the crowd up, and it turned this show right around. This was great. The whole thing, it got a "you deserve it" chant. That's what Roman got from the crowd at one point after Strowman had pulverized him. "You deserve it," they chanted. That's in addition to chants of "you suck" directed at Roman. They did the "na na na hey hey goodbye" song as he was being driven off to a local medical facility somewhere on Long Island. And I found myself sitting there confused because I was told last week, you guys told me the announcers, because I was in the building, I couldn't hear them, but you said that the announcers told us to pay no attention to that post-WrestleMania crowd in Orlando because they're just there to have fun. They always cheer those who they normally boo, and they boo those that they normally cheer. So when they booed Roman Reigns again and then loudly cheered for Braun Strowman's attempted murder of this man, I felt misled. Are you trying to tell me that the announcers lied to me? I find that very hard to believe. So during this, I tweeted that all I wanted for the rest of the show was for it to be nothing but Braun Strowman constantly coming back and finding new ways to kill Roman Reigns. I was hoping they would do an Austin McMahon-type skit at the hospital, where Roman's hooked up to the IV pole, and they're checking his vitals and everything, and then Strowman comes, "I'm not done with you yet," and he barges in and beats the piss out of him. That's what I was hoping for. It's already over the top. You may as well just go all the way with it. So that's what I tweeted, right? It was meant to be a funny tweet about a segment I liked, my favorite segment of the show. It didn't mean I actually wanted to see Roman Reigns dead, right? Anybody with a brain cell could have figured that out. But my God, you should have seen some of the comments I got even days later from members of the Roman Empire. Apparently, they don't have spell check in the Roman Empire. When I saw that Reigns put Strowman through a table at the house show on Friday night, because Roman Reigns was there. He didn't wrestle a match, but he showed up and he brawled with Braun Strowman with cracked ribs, we were told, and a supposed separated shoulder. Those were his injuries after this heinous attack here by Braun Strowman. When I saw that, okay, that they had him brawling with Strowman, he put Strowman through a table with a spear, I tweeted something sarcastically about, "Oh, it's nice to see WWE allowing Roman out there with a separated shoulder. What a tough job he has." And I guess that offended yet another member of the Empire. They posted about it on Instagram, I think it was. I don't know, it's in the group. Somebody screenshotted it and showed it to me. And the comments just were something else. The comments here were, now, I'm not even going to read what the person who made the original post said, because who cares? But there was one comment underneath who said, "Solo Monster is a good name for him because he'll probably die alone." And it's like, wow. Wow, he got me good. He got me good. Or she, or it, right? Whatever creature it was that posted that. You should, but seriously, you got to see the abuse I took for those two tweets. I mean, I remember Renee Young talking about getting death threats from Dean Ambrose fans, or Randy Orton's new wife getting nasty tweets from jealous fans because these people are just out of their mind. But when you see it up close, it really is. It's something else. And the thing is, like, these are adults. These aren't even children in most cases. I mean, they may have the reading comprehension of one, but these are grown adults. Case in point, this petition that went around this week asking WWE to fire Braun Strowman for what he did to Roman Reigns on Raw. Again, an adult fan. I won't mention her name, but an adult fan, a female fan, started a change.org petition. This is absolutely real. She started one other petition 2 years ago to try to get Seth Rollins' Nazi girlfriend fired from NXT, which she happily took credit for when they finally did release her. But I have to read this petition here. To the WWE, we, the WWE universe, are not pleased I guess she meant pleased, with Strowman's actions tonight on Raw following his brutal attack on Roman Reigns. Me and a lot of the WWE universe want Strowman fired, effective immediately. He crossed the line tonight following his attack on Roman, and now Roman is in the hospital with injuries. She's wrong, by the way. It's a local medical facility. Gotta get it right. If this is what you call entertainment, you failed miserably. Emphasis on the word you, for some reason. I don't care if he goes to SmackDown Live. We want him off of Raw or fired from WWE. I have been a fan of Raw for years, and out of everything I have ever seen happen on this show, this was by far the absolute worst. Really, that was the worst? You must be new here. Out of everything you've ever seen on Raw, apparently this was the worst. Stephanie's only been off TV for 2 weeks. How quickly people forget. So now this person is claiming she spoke to somebody in WWE and is trying to get the petition taken down. She wants people to stop signing it. But it got almost 3,000 signatures. Like, even if you assume that a portion of those are just gag signatures by, you know, other people who also think that this whole thing was a pile of crap, that's a lot of signatures. Imagine if she put that kind of effort towards something productive. How much better off the world would be. Now, on his podcast, Taz ranted about this whole Strowman-Roman thing. He feels, and I'm going off a report here because I didn't hear the entire segment, but I guess the crux of it is that he feels The Undertaker ought to be pissed off after the way WWE booked Roman to be destroyed by Strowman on Raw. And he's not wrong. He's not wrong. Now, I love the angle. I thought it was very entertaining. But he's got a point, right? Roman Reigns retires The Undertaker, only the second man ever to hand him a loss at WrestleMania. And 2 weeks later, he's killed by Braun Strowman. I could see Undertaker maybe not being too thrilled about the timing of that. Or maybe he doesn't give a crap. You know, I mean, Taz would know him better than I would, but as a former wrestler who worked there, I thought hearing, you know, that he said that was an interesting point. I had not heard anybody else make that point. Whatever Roman may have gained by beating Undertaker at WrestleMania is completely negated when you see him 2 weeks later being tossed around like that and getting cheered for getting his ass kicked. You know, I don't know, maybe it should have been Strowman in there with The Undertaker, if this is what they planned all along. They did have that stare down on Raw all those weeks ago, where the people chanted yes, or they may have chanted holy shit, I don't remember, but they were very happy, apparently, to see Braun Strowman and The Undertaker go face to face. It was like this big moment. I mean, I think the match would have been far worse if it was, I shouldn't say far worse. I do think it would have been worse if it was Strowman in there instead of Roman. And I think Strowman has made a lot of progress, and I've very much enjoyed watching him get better and just progress to the point that he's at now. And him and Roman both had a great match on that, whatever the pay-per-view was at the beginning of March, I think it was. All these events now, they just run together. Fastlane, right? I think it was Fastlane. So by no means am I trying to knock Braun by saying he's like a terrible wrestler or anything, but I think as a matchup, The Undertaker at this stage of the game in the condition he's in there with another big guy, like, and that could be Kane, it could be Big Show, it could be Braun, I don't think that would have been a good match. So I actually think Roman was a better opponent in that respect in terms of just a match, even though I didn't think the match was all that great. So not a match I would have pitched, but looking back on it, 2020, I don't know. I mean, it might have made more sense for Braun to be the one in there and for Braun to be the one to retire The Undertaker, especially if they wanted him to really, you know, get a lot of heat off the fact that he's the one who retired The Undertaker. I mean, that's one way to get this guy booed. I don't think people would have cheered if he would have destroyed The Undertaker at WrestleMania even worse than the way Roman Reigns did. And I think he probably could have taken that the way that Brock did in New Orleans. And if they pushed this guy to the moon, they could have pushed him as the next big monster. And then imagine, he's getting kind of a push that mirrors the one Brock got, right? Brock went in there and beat The Undertaker and just went on a path of destruction. Braun goes in there, beats The Undertaker, goes on a path of destruction, and it builds to SummerSlam. If they can wait that long, if they can put it off for that long, you build to a Brock Lesnar-Braun Strowman match at SummerSlam. The two monsters who slayed The Undertaker at WrestleMania for the first time ever. It's a fresh match with at least, you know, with two guys that people care about going one-on-one for the championship. That's what a championship match should be. That's what a main event should be. The more I think about that, the more I actually like that idea. And I still am hopeful that they will get there, that they will do Braun and Brock. If not at SummerSlam, then on some pay-per-view before then, Money in the Bank. I don't know if Money in the Bank is a Raw show or not, but I'm hopeful that they will do that match. Now, how they handle it, what the outcome is, are they going to kill Braun? I don't know. I hope not, because I don't expect Braun to win the championship. So how you handle that will be very interesting. But to go back to Taz's point, you know, again, maybe it should have been Strowman in that position. If he is supposed to be the heel monster, because he certainly didn't come off as a heel monster on this show. He came off as our monster, right? I mean, not that I'm a Roman Reigns hater, although the Roman Empire might think I am. But, you know, again, I love that segment on TV. I'll cheer that guy every time he comes out now. I thought that was great. But again, I mean, would that not have been a better spot for Braun to be in than Roman, looking back on it? It always felt ass backwards putting Roman in there because he's supposed to be the hero in all this. He's supposed to be the guy, you know, deep down that Vince wants him to be cheered. He just wants him to be loved, just like Hogan used to be and like Austin used to be and Cena at one time was. And it ain't happening right now. It might be happening with a segment of the audience, but you know, you know that for the aesthetics of it and everything, I'm sure that they love the fact that people are out there making noise. But if they could book the perfect product, they would not book Roman Reigns to go out there and be catcalled and be booed every single week. So it was always weird to me that they would even put him in that situation because they had to know going into WrestleMania what would happen. But they wanted to set the story up that way as Roman and Brock being the only two guys to have beaten the dead man at WrestleMania. And now next year, they're going to collide, I guess, in New Orleans for the championship. That's the plan. That's what Vince wants, and Vince wants what he wants. Finn Balor also had his first singles match back on Raw since coming back from his shoulder tear, and they put him in there with Jinder Mahal. Jinder's a big dude. Big as ever. All that dieting he talked about on Instagram, and he was on Talking Smack again. Nobody out-trains me. Nobody out-diets me. Nobody out... Well, I won't go there. But, big dude. He waffled Balor with a forearm so hard. He knocked Balor out just long enough for Balor to break his fall with his own face. He did a face plant on the mat hard enough that when the match was over, he had four, I think I counted four, giant red welts on his face after the match. Just brutal. Absolutely brutal shot. He managed to finish the match. He even hit the double foot stomp off the top rope for the win. But he clearly was not all there when the match was over and they zoomed in on his face. And for good reason. WrestlingNewsWorld.com broke the news that Balor did indeed suffer a concussion during that match. As you can imagine, a lot of comments now about how Finn Balor must be injury prone and this guy is made of glass. How can he be trusted to be in a main event position? Look, both times that Balor got hurt were freak accidents. So my advice would be, let's cool it with all the overblown Balor is injury prone nonsense, okay? Before he came to NXT, there was never any indication of him being injury prone in NXT. I don't remember him being out for extended periods of time with injuries, and he was down there for, well, at least 2 years, I think he was down there for, right? I don't remember him suffering any major injuries. And so he really has not been on the main roster for very long. He was befallen by two freak injuries. Rollins should not be buckle bombing people outside the ring, and thankfully he has not since then. I don't know if that's his choice. I don't know if they told him, hey, knock it off. But I'm glad he has. And in this case, Jinder, he connected a little too well on that forearm. And I have to defend Jinder on this too. Jinder's been getting a lot of crap from people this week. He made a mistake. It happens. any of this talk that he should be punished, he should be reprimanded in some way, again, it's overblown. Accidents happen. Nakamura kicked Austin Aries in the face. Hard enough, he broke the guy's orbital bone. Put him on the shelf for 5 months. Oh, well, hey, he is the king of strong style. Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way. That was an accident, just like this was an accident. Just because it may be someone you don't like doesn't make it any less of an accident than when someone you do like does the same thing. Now, if a pattern develops where Jinder's going out there and knocking half the roster into the middle of next week, then you do something about it. WWE has not commented on this publicly, so there's no word on how long Balor may be out for. They teased a Balor-Bray Wyatt program when Bray popped up on the Titantron, which I assume was to build to a match at Payback in 2 weeks. That may be in jeopardy now. You just never know with concussions. I mean, look how long Dolph Ziggler was out for after Jack Swagger kicked him in the head, right? I mean, he missed at least 6 or 7 weeks. He had to drop the championship, I think. I mean, look at Daniel Bryan. He was forced into an early retirement because of repeated concussions. They could evaluate Balor at Raw tomorrow night and clear him. Because they have their impact testing that they do. They may test him and be like, all right, it was a mild concussion. You seem to be okay. You're good to go. You just never know. Hopefully it'll be a quick recovery and he can get right back in there. Because you know it's got to be frustrating for him. He just came back. So hopefully it's a 1 or 2 week thing and he's back in action. This was not the only injury scare on this show. Nia Jax nearly killed Charlotte on a botched attempt at a shoulder breaker. Ugh, this was ugly. And then minutes later, Charlotte almost killed Nia when she kneed her right in the face on the way down from a top rope moonsault outside the ring. Both women were lucky they made it out of this match alive. Nia won. She won with a Samoan drop because Charlotte was on her way over to SmackDown, so she did the honors. She did the honors for Bayley at WrestleMania, and she did it again here on Raw. This was also the first of two appearances by the Drifter here on this show. He was seen literally drifting in the background, in the crowd, as the match was going on. The announcers made no mention of this. The Revival beat the New Day, who are also on their way to SmackDown. I love the We Broke Kofi's Ankle shirts that Dash and Dawson were wearing. Reminded me of the Owen 316 says, I just broke your neck shirt that Owen Hart used to wear. Now that was tasteless. This was nothing. This was part of a storyline. It's just a funny thing with the Revival. The Owen thing, you got to admit, that was probably over the line. He did legitimately almost turn Steve Austin into a paraplegic. So, you know, to walk around a week or two later wearing a shirt like that, I'm sure Owen felt bad enough about it. I would imagine the kind of person he was. He probably was not too thrilled about that. But anyway, Xavier Woods took a nasty-looking bump on a shatter machine at the end. It actually looked quite awesome. I was a little worried at first that maybe he had broken his neck, but he was okay. TJ Perkins pinned Austin Aries after Neville distracted Aries, and then Perkins turned heel after the match and gave Aries his detonation kick. This was after Neville had gotten into AJ's, or TJ, I should say, TJ's head backstage. See, that's the subconscious me wishing for a Neville-AJ Styles match, which hopefully at some point we will get. But there was a segment earlier in the show where Neville got in TJ's head. He was telling him, guys like Aries are taking opportunities away from you, and you've turned into a joke. And people were already booing TJ Perkins, so they're just rolling with it. Fans chanted, you still suck at him after he made the turn here. Seth Rollins teased leaving Raw for SmackDown after what happened at WrestleMania with Stephanie McMahon taking that table bump. He came out to cut a promo. He said, I know that when Stephanie comes back, she's going to make my life a living hell, so it would be a lot easier for me to just cut my losses and go work for Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan. But that was all just a swerve, and he said, I'm staying right here on Monday Night Raw. I have unfinished business here on Raw. Kurt Angle came out. Told Rollins, as long as I'm the GM, you'll always have a place on Raw. And I'm watching these two guys, they're shaking hands, like Seth Rollins and Kurt Angle for the first time ever sharing a ring together. And I'm just thinking, man, that would be a cool match to see down the road. Kurt Angle against Seth Rollins. I'd buy a ticket to go see that. Samoa Joe jumped Rollins and Kurt tried to pull Joe off of him. I thought Angle might try to take Joe down, a la Ken Shamrock at WrestleMania 13 when he waistlocked Bret Hart down to the mat, but he didn't do it. Rollins fought back. He stunned Joe with an enziguri, and Joe left the ring. So there's another match for payback. Sami Zayn pinned The Miz with a victory roll in Miz's first match back on Raw. Welcome home, Miz. The announcers called this an upset win for Sami Zayn. When a win over The Miz is considered an upset, you know that you're having a bad year. Sami won here, and he ended up going to SmackDown, so he bucked the trend of losing on your way going from one brand to another. In fact, I think Sami might have been the only person who was going to SmackDown ultimately who won their final match on Raw. I could be wrong, but I think he might be the only one. So, not a very good start for The Miz here on his new show. Dana Brooke was backstage reading a book called How to Be Your Own Protege. I look in my crystal ball and I see a future as a valet. Emma walked up and basically tried to boss her around. Dana said, "We're not together anymore, and I'm learning to stand on my own two left feet." We got a segment with all the women, or most of them anyway, on Raw. It started with Sasha and Bayley, and Sasha was this close. She was this close to turning on Bayley when, or at least not turning like, you know, beating her with a chair or anything like that, but every time we see these two, they're all smiling and they're hugging and they're best of friends. And here Sasha was like, there was a change in her demeanor because she wants the championship. She wants that Raw women's title. But before this could go any further, Alexa Bliss came out to a big pop. She cut a promo on both of them. That'll be interesting because there's been rumors for a long time about there being some kind of heat between Alexa and Sasha. It's never been proven. It could just be, you know, internet BS, but that's been around for a while. I think it might have stemmed from an interview that Alexa did a few years ago where she was thanking a bunch of people who kind of helped her in NXT, and she thanked, like, everybody except Sasha. I don't know if that just kind of reinforced the rumor or if that started the rumor, but I guess they're working together now, so whether they like each other or not, they're going to have to work together. Mickey James showed up, called herself the greatest women's champion of all time. She told Alexa that our feud is far from over. Suddenly, Nia Jax came back out and body checked the hell out of Mickey, just absolutely steamrolled her. She took out Sasha, she took out Bayley, she posed with Bayley's championship. She stared down Alexa on her way out, but she left her alone. I'm happy they kept Sasha and Bayley on the same brand. And got Charlotte the hell away from her. They need to keep Sasha away from Charlotte for at least a year. Maybe by then the roles will be reversed, and Sasha will be the heel, and Charlotte will be the babyface, and they can feud all over again. But for now, they need to be kept apart. So you have these women here. You throw in Emma. You throw in Summer Rae when she comes back, if she comes back soon. And to me, again, I said this earlier, Raw has the advantage when it comes to their women's division. Main event was a champion versus champion match between Dean Ambrose, the Intercontinental Champion, and Kevin Owens, the United States Champion. Ambrose won with Dirty Deeds. It was a good match. Kind of uneventful, though, I would say, to end. You know, this was a show that was promoted very hard, and to just end the show with a Kevin Owens-Dean Ambrose match and a Chris Jericho run in there after he gave Owens the Codebreaker. I mean, Jericho was very popular. Again, remember, he is a Long Island native. They were in Long Island. Contrary to what some people may think, he was not born in Canada. He was born in Manhasset, which is on Nassau County, baby. That's where I went to college. So the fans love seeing Jericho. I guess they were fine with it. I just thought there was going to be more to the end of this show, but that's how it ended. Dean Ambrose wins. So, again, overall, I was very disappointed in the format of the whole shakeup thing. I thought there was going to be more to it than there was. But this show was all about the Braun Strowman-Roman Reigns segment. That was just... That will go down as one of the greatest segments in Raw history. Not like top 5 or maybe even top 10, but it'll be up there. If you made a top 50 list, it'd probably be on there somewhere. Okay? It was great. And that brings us to SmackDown Live from the TD Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. SmackDown poll, over 2,400 votes, 88% thumbs up, 12% thumbs down. An impressive Nielsen number for SmackDown this week, 3.1 million viewers. That's the best showing for SmackDown since the draft show last year. So I guess the shakeup worked. I guarantee that number's going down this week. The question is by how much. JBL was on his best behavior this week on SmackDown. I wonder why. I know there were loud fire JBL chants during the show. They even had security eject a fan who held up a JBL bullied me sign on TV. They threw him out of the arena. They pulled the United Airlines finish on him. WWE supposedly negotiating some sort of settlement with Mauro Ranallo that would likely prohibit him from talking about the quote-unquote situation publicly. And you knew that was coming. You knew they would want to just get this settled as quickly as possible and move on because it's in their best interest, right? To put this thing to bed as quickly as they can. And I don't know if that's going to include an early release from his contract. They've gone public in saying that Mauro's contract runs through August 12th. So I don't know if that would be part of any kind of settlement they reach. Mauro's going back to working. Actually, I think he might have last night. He was going to be doing announcing, I think, for an MMA show on the Fight TV app. I believe that might have been last night. I'm not sure. But he's been a lot more visible, a lot more active on social media. He seems to be doing a lot better, which is very cool. And, you know, as far as this whole situation goes, I think it's a shame that it seemingly had to end this way. Nobody has said for sure, but if you read between the lines, I think it's safe to say his run in WWE is now over. And look, you know, onward and upward. That's all I have to say. On to better things, and WWE is going to do what they think they have to do to put this to bed, and I don't think anything's going to change. Kevin Owens came out in the opening segment of the show in a suit with a trimmed beard. He's now calling himself the Champion of America. Reminds me of when Al Snow was the European champion. He used to dress up each week as somebody from a different European country. Head, too. He would dress up head. Owens should come out each week dressed as somebody from a different state. Right? SmackDown's in Kentucky this week. He should come out dressed maybe as a jockey. If they come to Chicago, he could come out wearing a bulletproof vest like everybody else in that city. What the hell is going on in Chicago lately? Can somebody there please tell me what's going on there? Anyway, Baron Corbin came out demanding a title shot since he was due an Intercontinental title match, and then Dean Ambrose went and got himself drafted to Raw. Or apparently now drafted, I'm sorry, he just went to Raw. That was another thing that was weird about this whole shakeup thing. It almost sounded like guys were just picking and choosing where they went. Like on Talking Smack, in one respect, you had Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan talking like, oh, these were Daniel's moves, you made some good moves, Daniel. But then you had Seth Rollins on TV Monday night talking about how, maybe I should just go to SmackDown. It's like, dude, it ain't your choice. You can't just go to SmackDown. Or maybe you can. I don't know, because they never bothered to explain how any of this worked. So yeah, Dean Ambrose went, he's on Raw now, and so Corbin can't get his IC title match, so he wants a shot at the US title, and Owens said he didn't deserve one. Sami Zayn's music hit, and the look on Kevin Owens' face when Sami came out was just perfect. It was priceless. He could not believe that this man was drafted to the same brand as him, is just following his coattails wherever he goes. He can't get this guy away from him. AJ Styles came out next. Again, very happy that they kept this guy on SmackDown. I think it would have been, you know, maybe not death, but it would have put SmackDown in critical condition to lose somebody like AJ Styles. Daniel Bryan came out to make it a triple threat number one contenders main event with AJ, Zayn, and Corbin, with the winner to meet Owens at a later date. Randy Orton beat Eric Rowan in a two-minute match by DQ after Bray Wyatt appeared on the TitanTron to tell Orton that he'll see him in their House of Horrors match. I saw WWE put a survey out this week asking the fans what they would like to see in a House of Horrors match, which tells me they have no idea what a House of Horrors match even is. But props to them at least for soliciting feedback. If there's certain things you wanted to see, now's your chance to let them know. I said myself, I would prefer that it's not a regular match in a ring. I'd love to see it at like a compound somewhere, in the woods, use all kinds of weapons. Like, just go all the way with it. Especially, this is going to be the blow-off to their feud. So hopefully they can get creative with this. But Bray said his piece. Orton turned back around, went outside to go get Rowan. And when he did, Rowan hit him with the steel steps. This was crap. The U.S. title is being positioned as more important than the WWE title right now, and rightfully so. I mean, I am far more intrigued by what's going on with that title than I am this one. I still have no idea why they would draft Bray to Raw and split him away from Rowan. I'll sound like a broken record on this, but I just think that's a dumb move. I know SmackDown is the show that gets the most usually out of, you know, what it has, but Roman's not going anywhere on his own. It's just not happening. And speaking of Rowan, remember when I mentioned Tom Savini a few weeks ago, the horror movie makeup guy? He was in the front row for SmackDown. There was a whole article on the website Bloody Disgusting, which is like a horror movie website. He's apparently been working with WWE for a few years now, working on new masks and such for the company. He did Triple H's skull mask for WrestleMania 30 and 31. He just worked on that brand new mask for Kalisto, that Kalisto debuted at WrestleMania. And Eric Rowan's new sheet mask with the hose going through it, which I said looked cool. This is before I even knew Savini had anything to do with it. I said that was the one good thing about Rowan's return, is that he had a cool mask. And apparently Savini is one of the people who worked on it. He made that one, and it's a pretty good story on him and his affiliation with WWE. It's a story by John Squires. It went up on the 11th, if you want to go back and take a look at it on the Bloody Disgusting website. Randy Orton did a Q&A at Wizard World in St. Louis last weekend. And according to a report that was sent into the website bleedingcool.com, he talked about his WrestleMania match with Bray Wyatt. He said he was pleased with the match, so he was the one, but not with his entrance. Now, I didn't really notice this from inside the stadium from where I was. I had to go back and watch it on the network to get the full effect. But apparently that long snake that they superimposed on the ramp as he walked to the ring, Orton was very upset because he felt the snake looked less like a snake and more like a giant sperm. Now, having gone back and watched it, he's right. It does look like a giant sperm. And the idea that Randy Orton was walking to the ring at WrestleMania being chased by a giant sperm is absolutely hilarious and horrifying all at the same time. Now, not as hilarious as when the closed captions back in the day used to mess up the lyrics to the beginning of his theme song and, you know, would say, like, I have boys in my shed, or I ate poison, now I'm dead, but this was still pretty funny. Seriously, not that I was am ever going to watch that match over again, but now I will never be able to unsee that now that he's mentioned that. What's even funnier, you know that these guys, right, deep down, you just know that deep down they're just chomping at the bit to break out of those PG handcuffs. Remember that Comic-Con Q&A a while back where John Cena was asked by a little kid what his favorite food was? And Nikki Bella was sitting right next to him, and he just goes, if I had Nikki stand up right now, I couldn't show you. And he told the kid, don't worry, you'll get that joke in a few years. Here, a kid asked Orton, I don't know how old he was, he might have been 9 or 10 years old. He asked Randy Orton a question, like, what's your favorite pay-per-view? And Orton said, I love the big four, but even WrestleMania has its downside. Like having to ride a giant sperm down the ramp. He must have really hated that entrance. He went out of his way to bring it up again. And I can only imagine the expression on that kid's face, or his parents' face, if they were there with him. The article, I think the article actually said the kid couldn't have been older than 10, if that. I think it's hilarious, but I don't have a kid, so I might feel differently if I did. He also said he'd love to have some input into his WrestleMania entrances, because right now he has none, and he feels like a lot of times he gets screwed out of entrances. I don't know, I mean, I thought he had a pretty cool entrance in New Orleans when Rev Theory sang his entrance song live. That was pretty cool. But he says he wants to have an elaborate entrance like Triple H. Well, if he can marry into the family somehow, he can have a fancy entrance like Triple H. The Usos beat American Alpha in what turned into a pretty hot match there at the end. Short, but hot, which is my nickname, ironically, for Alexa Bliss. Samoan Splash to Gable for the win. After the match, Primo and Epico attacked Jordan and Gable. They were not out there as the travel agents. They were just Primo and Epico, and this was treated like a serious attack. SmackDown, I would say, is probably the best place for these two. They are good wrestlers, but they have just been on a journey to nowhere now, and I don't know if they can recover from that. It's very hard when you're established at a certain level for so long, and you're beaten down and beaten down, and you're meant to not be taken seriously, all of a sudden for people to take you seriously. We'll see. I'm sure they're going to try on SmackDown. I don't know if they're going to succeed. But these guys are really good. So if they get a shot, then maybe they'll go places. Mojo Rawley beat Jinder Mahal. Rob Gronkowski of the Patriots. They were in Boston, so he was very popular there in that building. He was once again at ringside, just as he was at WrestleMania. And I see now there's talk of Gronk possibly joining WWE after he retires from the NFL. I'm already sick of seeing this guy. It's like, this is the second time now. It's like enough already. Jinder confronted him. Gronk splashed a drink in his face. That allowed Mojo to throw him back inside and finish it with a running forearm, which is amusing given that it was a forearm from Jinder that injured Finn Balor the night before. Mojo then dove into the front row to celebrate with Gronk after the match. You know, Jinder made a good point on Talking Smack when he was ranting about this with Shane McMahon. Like, in terms of storyline, it's like, why the hell is Gronk even allowed at ringside after what happened at WrestleMania? The guy hopped the barricade. Now, I know Jinder instigated him and all, but he hopped the barricade. He got into the ring. He assaulted this man. He's not a member of the roster, and yet there he was. He was allowed to come back in and be in the front row a week later. I think Jinder has a very valid point here. I wonder if this is building to a match between Rob Gronkowski and Jinder. I doubt it. I mean, he's still an active player. I can't see the Patriots allowing him to actually wrestle. Very different doing a run-in or splashing a drink in someone's face. But I'm sure if they could, they would do that. They would do a Jinder Mahal-Rob Gronkowski match. What a match that would be. Shane McMahon was out next for a State of the Women's Division address. He brought out Naomi, Carmella, Natty, and Becky. Shane then swerved everybody. He was teasing the arrival of a second-generation star with a Hall of Fame father. Had everybody thinking it was Charlotte, but Tamina Snuka came out instead. She's back after knee surgery. Shane went to leave, but then he came back, and finally he was like, "And Charlotte!" And Charlotte made her SmackDown debut. Aiden English said that he is now on his own. He reverted back to his old singing gimmick with the spotlight in the ring, and Ty Dillinger interrupted him, and it was a very short match. Ty won with the tiebreaker. Nakamura. Let's talk about Shinsuke Nakamura. This was week number two for him here on SmackDown. He came out to interrupt Dolph Ziggler, who was out there bitching about something or other. And the reaction, again, second week in a row, a rock star reaction for this man. Just a total main event level superstar babyface response for Nakamura, who actually spoke. He said his first words like a newborn here on SmackDown. He said, "Do you want to know who I am? I am Shinsuke Nakamura." Not exactly lighting the world on fire with that promo, but at least he spoke. That's a step in the right direction. Ziggler went for a super kick. Nakamura caught his foot. He shoved him backwards down on his ass, and Ziggler bailed. So it looks like Dolph Ziggler will be Nakamura's first opponent, which is a good first opponent to have. I think they'll have a good match. AJ Styles, Sami Zayn, and Baron Corbin to determine a new number one contender for the U.S. title triple threat main event. This was a fun match. AJ hit the springboard 450 on Corbin. He had the match won. Sami broke up the pin. Sami ended up getting out of a Styles Clash attempt. He hit Corbin with the Huluva kick, which knocked him out of the ring. Phenomenal forearm by Styles to Sami, and that was all she wrote. AJ Styles, the new number one contender. He will meet Kevin Owens at some point for the United States Championship. Unless Owens loses the title to Chris Jericho, in which case, I guess it would be Jericho against AJ, which really doesn't make any sense. So that sort of gives away the finish, I think, of the Owens-Jericho match. And on the point of Corbin, I want to make a point to mention the fact that he continues to improve. I enjoy watching Baron Corbin. I've enjoyed most of his matches. Now, granted, a lot of times I've seen him in there in these three- and four-way matches with guys that are really good. But I've seen him have singles matches that are really good, too. And I could see a Corbin-Zayn feud, kind of the big man, little man thing on SmackDown. I could see them having some great matches. So hopefully Corbin continues to improve, because I think he's going to be a main event player on this brand before the year is out. I had him pegged at the beginning of the year to win Money in the Bank. I'm going to stick with that prediction for now, but I would not be at all shocked to see him with the championship before the year was over. Whether that's on a cash-in or if he just earns a title shot on his own, I see big things in his future. But, it's hard to be called the best when you share the same brand with guys like AJ Styles, right? You can never really... Styles and Nakamura on the same brand. At best, Corbin maybe could get himself up to number number four, right? Or number five, maybe, behind Owens and Zayn. So there's some good talent on this brand. I know earlier I gave the edge to Raw on paper because they have the bigger names. They have the better women's division, the better tag team division. They have the cruiserweights. But I am looking forward to this new era of SmackDown here.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
That's the new NXT theme song by CFO Money, Rage. Makes me remember our old friend Alex Riley. But it is a new era for NXT. New theme song, new graphics, new championship belts, and some new additions to the roster. You know, we had a superstar shakeup on Raw and SmackDown this week, but this felt like an NXT shakeup. And it's one that this show has badly needed for a while now. It's felt like NXT has just been in something of a holding pattern. It has lost a lot of buzz that it used to have, so this is exactly the shot in the arm that they needed, and I'm looking forward to seeing how this new era stacks up against the old one. Aleister Black made his NXT television debut on the regular show, beating Corey Hollis with a devastating spin kick he calls Black Mass. It was the only offensive move of the match, the only bit of offense that either one of these guys got. Lasted all of 10 seconds. This guy's the real deal. He's got the cool entrance. His theme music is pretty sick. And he's a pretty good wrestler to boot. That always helps. I could see him quickly becoming a favorite of mine on this show. Backstage, the announcer lady, whatever her name is, congratulated Ty Dillinger on his call-up to SmackDown Live. Was it Dasha? I don't know if it was Dasha. I know Dasha, but some of these women, they trot them out there just at random sometimes. I have no idea who they are. So she's congratulating Ty Dillinger on his call-up to SmackDown Live. He said that I have unfinished business to settle first here on NXT with Eric Young. He said next week he gets EY inside a steel cage. Because we all know how well those steel cages usually keep people out. DIY beat Dylan Miley and Michael Blaze. If that name sounds familiar, the Dylan Miley name, not Michael Blaze. It's because you've heard that name mentioned on this podcast before. Dylan Miley has been in developmental now for some time. The guy is a freak, and I mean that in the best possible way. Last time I mentioned his name, I believe it was Sound Off 482 by my records back in February of this year. I said he is one to watch out for. So I was very excited to see him make his debut here. He looked pretty impressive, I think, for the time that he was actually in there. Got Johnny Gargano up for a vertical suplex. He walked around the ring with him before dropping him. Made the mistake then of tagging in his partner, who went and screwed the whole thing up. Lost to DIY's stereo kick to the head finish. Miley was so enraged after the match, he destroyed his partner, clawed him by the head, slammed him down into the mat repeatedly. If there's anyone in wrestling today who can make that claw gimmick work with those hands, it's this guy. Then after the show on YouTube, they put a video up of the partner being tended to in the back by a doctor. And Miley walks up to him. He's all concerned. He's very calm. He's apologizing profusely for what happened. Oh, I hope he's all right. I hope he's all right. So he seems to be doing a bipolar monster gimmick. Or like an Incredible Hulk deal, where one minute he's the Hulk, and the next minute he's Bruce Banner. He's a guy to watch. He's a guy to put on your list of guys to watch. I've yet to see him in a real match, like one-on-one, but I'm anxious to. Brock Lesnar supposedly trained with him a couple of years back. Lesnar saw him work a match at Fan Access before WrestleMania 31. He was so impressed by him, he flew himself down to Orlando to train with Dylan Miley. If Brock Lesnar says, wow, this guy is impressive, I have to go train with him, that's saying something. We got an Ember Moon vignette recorded inside the Amway Center in Orlando after TakeOver ended, and they were taking the ring down. She was looking very dejected after her loss to Asuka. This was supposed to be her big moment, she said, and she vowed to win the championship from Asuka. Ruby Riott beat Kimberly Frankel, better known as Kimberly on the indie scene, going by her real name here. This was all Ruby Riott until Nikki Cross showed up at ringside. Kimberly took advantage for about a minute or two after that. She was finally done in by a Pele kick Nikki Cross walked off. They never did come to blows. It's nice to have some new female faces around. All three that I just mentioned here, Ruby Riott, Kimberly, and Nikki Cross. You know, Nikki Cross, I guess, has been around for a few months, but still all relatively new to the NXT brand. I know they're doing this women's tournament in the next couple of months. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of new female faces that get signed and likely end up on the NXT brand. So I think we're finally about to get that big infusion of new talent that I've been waiting for, you know, since Charlotte and Bayley and Sasha and them left NXT. There's been a big void. And there really has not been anybody who's come along. And I still think Ember Moon will ultimately be the one to beat Asuka. But there really has been nobody who's come along who has looked like somebody who could stand up to this woman in a believable way. And, you know, they got Peyton Royce and Billie Kay and Liv Morgan and Aaliyah. I mean, they have women down there. But this division is, it does not have the buzz that it once did. And I think we're about to get some of that back, and so that's pretty exciting. Main event on the show was Drew McIntyre, new music and all, making his NXT in-ring debut against Oney Lorcan. This was awesome. Just a hard-hitting, competitive back-and-forth match. A lot of fun to watch, especially when Lorcan started smacking the shit out of McIntyre, and McIntyre came back with a reverse Alabama slam, which is something I don't think I've seen before. Not in a while, anyway. He won with a wicked running boot. So hard it turned Lorcan inside out. Somewhere in here, Lorcan got busted open badly on the side of his head. It looked like maybe by the eye, but you could tell on that side he was covered in blood. After the match, they interviewed Drew on stage. He said he had the option to go anywhere he wanted, but he chose to come to NXT. Fans love that. It really is incredible to see him here and to remember what they had him doing just a few years ago, bumping around and jobbing to Hornswoggle. Hopefully they pulled their head out of their asses and they realize what they have in this guy now. The show ended with a farewell to Shinsuke Nakamura, who is now part of the SmackDown Live roster. He cut his best promo. He did his best mic work here since coming to WWE. This is the best that his English has sounded since the first time they handed him a microphone. He thanked the NXT coaches, the wrestlers, the fans. He put over the NXT brand. I will always be NXT, he said. And he led the crowd in a chant of, "We are NXT." The entire roster came out on stage to applaud. William Regal was out there in front. Hideo Itami, Finn Balor popped his head in, made a surprise appearance here. This was very nice. And I think it really punctuated the feeling that this truly was the start of the next phase of NXT. And now it's in the hands of Bobby Roode and Cassius Ohno and Drew McIntyre. And we'll see what they do with it. I really do want to see more of the UK crew as well. If I had one more request. Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate, you know, get some NXT, or not NXT, but UK title defenses on this show. Make them a more active part of that NXT roster. And Wolfgang, don't forget my man Wolfgang. I want to talk about Katsuyori Shibata and that whole situation in New Japan. For the people who have asked, I did watch the Shibata-Okada match. It was awesome. Except for the headbutt spot. That was disturbing. It was not only disturbing to watch, it was disturbing to listen to. The thud that his head made when he cracked it against Okada's, it was sick and not in a good way. Like, wow, that was a sick move. It was more like, I don't ever want to see that guy do that again. I mean, sure, it made for a great visual when the blood started to trickle down his face, but not at the expense of almost killing himself. Literally, he could have died. He collapsed a few times on his way to the back. His legs were very unsteady. That may have been the apparent paralysis that set in on his right side, which has gotten better since then. This is from a Tokyo Sports article. He suffered a subdural hematoma, which, according to WebMD, because that's where I get all my medical knowledge from, is a collection of blood that collects outside the brain, usually caused by severe head injuries. The bleeding and the increased pressure on the brain can be life-threatening. Some require surgical drainage. And in this case, according to the story, Shibata did undergo immediate surgery. 5 hours of surgery, which was deemed successful. He may never wrestle again. Let that sink in. Shibata is 37 years old, one of the top stars in New Japan, and he may have just wrestled his last match. This is not a worked injury. I saw some reports that maybe it was. It's not. It was only 6 weeks ago that Tomoaki Honma broke his neck on a draping DDT spot in a match in New Japan and was paralyzed. And I believe he's got some feeling back since then in his arms and his feet, but he still can't move his neck or his back. 6 weeks later, he too may never wrestle again. He wants to. He's optimistic that he will. They all are. But he may never wrestle again. And listen, I've said this before. I'm not a fan of banning moves. You can't do this. You can't. This move is banned. Like, I'm not a fan of that. I'm not saying ban all headbutts. Just be smarter about these things. I know it's Japan. It's strong style and all that. They have their way of doing things. But this was just plain stupid. There's no need for it. You know, there's another aspect to this when it comes to safety that I don't see anybody else talking about. That is the fact that it's not just Shibata's bell getting rung every time he does that. It's his opponent. That's two heads smashing together. What if Okada suffered the same injury on that spot? What if you had two top guys go down in one match with potential career-ending injuries? Can you imagine if they lost Okada and Shibata? And this company is about to run a bunch of shows in California this summer. They're trying to break into the U.S. market. That would be bad for business to lose those two guys. So New Japan probably needs to have a talk with these guys. You know, there's a reason that headbutts are banned in UFC. They're banned in a legitimate full contact sport for a reason. I mean, you could headbutt somebody anywhere else on the body practically, but we're talking skull on skull here. Skull on skull is stupid. And I hope that if they do ever clear him to wrestle again, and it sounds like a long shot, but who knows, I hope he never tries anything like that again. Kane made it official this past week. He is running for office, or at least Glenn Jacobs is. He launched his campaign this week for mayor of Knox County, Tennessee, which is where he calls home. He is running as a Republican. The election takes place next May in 2018. He is running on a campaign of keeping taxes low and making Knox County a place to be proud of. And the best part about this is that in his his campaign slogan and the logo and all that, The slogan is, lighting the way for our future. And in the logo, there's a flame, right? Just feels right. It just feels right. He told the local newspaper that there is no timetable on his return to the ring. His return to the ring is TBD. It is to be determined. So he's basically putting his career on hold to see how this goes. If he loses, chances are we'll see him back in the ring, would be my guess. And others have done this before. I mean, Jerry Lawler ran for mayor of Memphis at the height of the Attitude Era and lost. Rhino, just last year, Rhino ran for, I think it was a congressional seat. He lost. Actually, it might have been a district seat. It was a small seat, but he still lost. I don't know what the political landscape looks like in Knox County. I don't live there, but I know the current mayor can't run again because of term limits. So it's not like he's running against an incumbent. And, you know, one way or another, there will be a new mayor next year. So Kane at least has a decent shot, one would think. You know, he's a super smart guy, very articulate, very well-spoken, very likable. Plus, he could probably just scare off any competition by, you know, running a campaign ad filled with nothing but, you know, clips of him setting people on fire and hooking jumper cables to his boss's nutsack. I mean, that would be a deterrent for me. I wouldn't want to have anything to do with somebody like that. I wouldn't want to debate somebody like that. I would drop out of the race. Just let the guy win. I want to mention this before we get to the mailbag here. If anyone lives in or around the Pittsburgh area, the Community College of Allegheny County is hosting a two-part class on the life and career of Bruno Sammartino on the school's North Campus on April 19th, which is this Wednesday, and again on April 26th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. The classes are being taught by former WCW announcer Chris Cruz, who has known Bruno for over 30 years. And Bruno himself, rumor has it, is supposed to be making an appearance at the second class on the 26th. Students will learn about Bruno's life from birth until today, including his time hiding from the Nazis, his 4,000 days as World Heavyweight Champion, right up to his induction into the WWE Hall of Fame. So the class is $49. I'm not sure if that's per session or if that's for both classes combined. And I'm not sure how many spots are left, but if you're interested in signing up, you can call 412-788-7507. If I was in the Pittsburgh area, I'd do it. I'd go back to school to take a class on Bruno Sammartino. Let's get to your mailbag questions. If you have them, you could email them to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. I want to give a shout out to TV Tracks for his support, as always, on YouTube. That clip from last week's podcast where I answered someone's question about whether or not CM Punk would have been a headliner in the Attitude Era for WWE seemed to get a lot of Punk's fans triggered, I believe is the word for it. Although, surprisingly, most people did agree with me that Punk would not have been a main eventer in WWE in the Attitude Era with all the talent they had there at that time. And I'm talking Punk at his peak. I'm not talking, well, of course, CM Punk when he was, you know, freaking 19 years old in 1990 or whatever he was. No, I'm talking like taking the CM Punk from 2011 or 2012 and dumping him into the WWE Attitude Era in 1998, 1999. I don't think he would have been a main eventer. Simple as that. And most people seem to agree with me on that. So anyway, the clip is up on Trax's channel, or you could just go back and listen to the full segment. It's from the mailbag on episode 490 last weekend. I got asked by a couple of different people this week, including one on my Facebook page. So I figured I would just answer it here since it's topical. Basically, the question was, you know, you were at one time a contributor to the Layfield Report, which was JBL's old news website. In your time working with him, did you ever experience any bullying by him or anything that would speak to the allegations against him? No, I did not. I wrote for his website for over a year. I think it was about 13 months. He was the one who brought me on. It wasn't even like an intermediary or something. It was him. I mean, he was looking for writers. He put some post up on his own Facebook page. I think I might have gotten in late. I think I missed whatever the deadline was, and I wrote a post saying, I'm sorry, I missed this. You know, I would have, you know, offered to help. And he got back to me. I remember he wrote me back within like half an hour. Like, there were people posting comment after comment, and he wasn't responding to hardly anybody. I made a post, and he responded back to me within 30 minutes. And he said, yeah, I'd love to have you write for my site. And that's how it started. The few times we actually interacted, he was always very cordial to me. You know, I enjoyed my work there. In fact, the article that DDP used in his Jake the Snake movie, where I made my Royal Rumble pitch for a Jake comeback appearance at the Rumble, if you watch the movie, I think you could even see the Layfield Report header on top. It was for his website. So I have no complaints about my work there. I enjoyed it. I know the site's long gone by now. But also keep in mind, you know, me writing for his website and saying that he was nice to me, that's very different from working with somebody in the workplace. Those are two totally different things. But no, in my experience, I didn't have any issues like that. Jay from Dallas, Texas. Kurt Angle is back as GM. Now the question is, which WWE superstar goads him into coming back for a big time match? If Kurt ever wrestles again, who does he feud with that would make Monday Night Raw worth watching again? Well, if you would have asked me that question a week ago, I would have said Kevin Owens, since he's so good at talking trash, but I guess that's out the window now. From the Raw brand, I would think it's got to be Samoa Joe, or it's got to be The Miz, I would think, right? Miz already picked a fight with one GM. It makes sense for him to do the same with Kurt. And Joe and Angle, they've had some wars before. I wouldn't mind seeing them go at it one more time. So yeah, either Samoa Joe or The Miz. Doran from Romania. Do you think Samoa Joe not having an opponent for WrestleMania 33 was because WWE did not have time to find him a suitable opponent, or was it pure ignorance on their part? If Brock is rumored to face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 34, then I would love to see Joe against Strowman or Joe against AJ Styles. I think it's just a matter of timing. I don't think it's ignorance. I think he got called up right before WrestleMania. You know, I mean, I assume that was a relatively recent decision. You know, it wasn't something they planned for months and months in advance. Now, if not, if they knew months in advance, they were calling him up after the Rumble, then that's just short-sighted on their part not to have a match lined up for him. But that's why you don't see a lot of guys typically getting called up a month or two before WrestleMania, right? It's usually right after Mania when they're first starting to build new feuds and new stories and new matches. I was stunned that Joe did not get involved in the Seth Rollins Triple H match, especially, like, I thought, okay, it's a no DQ match. Anything goes. So, of course, Joe's going to get involved. But then he never showed up. That surprised me. Binder from Milwaukee. I know people have shat on Jinder Mahal. So we have Binder on Jinder here. They've shat on him in the past, but it seems like he's actually a pretty decent wrestler. As an Indian, I'm excited to see someone like him who can actually wrestle, unlike Kali, get a shot. Do you see him getting the chance to become a high mid-card star? Kali or who's that guy from Impact? The Shira Shake guy. Mahabali Shira. Last I saw of him, he wasn't very good either. Look, Jinder is a capable wrestler. He's a fine wrestler. He's got size. Even before he turned into the incredible Indian Hulk, he was a big dude, right? He's probably, what, 6'3", 6'4", something like that. He went all the way to the finals of that very first NXT title tournament before he lost to Seth Rollins, so they must have seen something in him even back then. But I think he just fell victim to what a lot of guys do. The ones who get these ethnic gimmicks, right, with the stereotypical music and all that kind of stuff. That was commonplace in the 70s and the 80s, and even into the 90s. I don't think that helped him. He got away from that a bit with 3MB. I mean, look, every now and then it could pay off. And you could argue, was it tasteless or not? But they did that with Muhammad Ali. Or Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Hassan. Muhammad Ali played up a lot of racial things back then too, and it worked out for him. You know, he knew how to get people stirred up. But Muhammad Hassan got legitimate heel heat. And were it not for that segment they did with the terrorist, which was just stupid, were it not for UPN saying, we don't want this character on the show, you know, who knows how far he could have gone with that gimmick, but, you know, the guy was a heat-seeking missile with it. So there are situations where sometimes it could work. Again, it might cross the boundaries of what you would consider tasteful or tasteless, but it doesn't really do a lot of good for a lot of guys. And it certainly didn't seem to help Jinder. He got away from that a bit with 3MB. He got to show more personality, but he was never going to go anywhere doing the 3MB stuff. It was a comedy game. It was a joke. The best thing Drew McIntyre could have done was leave the company and go reinvent himself. And that's exactly what he did. And now he's going to be positioned as a top star on NXT. Jinder went away. I don't remember I think he got released, but whatever. He went away. They brought him back. And what's the first thing they have him doing? I come in peace. I come in peace. What is he, E.T.? I mean, let's face facts here. They brought him back for the same reason they brought back Curt Hawkins. To put over the guys they actually care about. So he goes in there and he loses to Roman Reigns. He loses to Finn Balor. He loses to Sami Zayn. He loses to Cesaro. He loses to Mojo Rawley because Mojo is the guy that they're trying to elevate, not Jinder. Jinder's getting lots of TV time now. I'm sure that's because of the way he looks. Maybe he could be a solid middle-of-the-card guy, but anything higher than that, I don't really see it happening because that's not the role they brought him in for. Brenton from California. Since Nakamura debuted on the main roster, I've been thinking about what his first WrestleMania match would be. Do you think going against AJ Styles is a safe, easy route that will guarantee a great match? Or do you think having Shinsuke go up against a megastar like John Cena would be an even better first WrestleMania appearance? Oh, I don't know. Ask Bray Wyatt how that first WrestleMania appearance went for him. I think either one of those matches would be big for WrestleMania. I personally want Nakamura and AJ. My whole plan before the shakeup was move Balor over to SmackDown, build to a Styles Balor and move the whole club over to SmackDown, build to something at SummerSlam with AJ and Balor, and save AJ Nakamura for WrestleMania next year. That would have been my plan if I was trying to map things out. But I could see them doing AJ Nakamura now at SummerSlam, maybe. If they do it then that would free him up to face John Cena at WrestleMania next year. The last couple of new guys John Cena wrestled at Mania were Bray Wyatt and Rusev, and he beat them both. Now, Rusev, you could see coming from a mile away. He was the stereotypical foreign heel. He was the foreign menace. He was the unbeaten U.S. champ. And I said, eventually he will hit the brick wall. That is Mr. USA, John Cena, and that's exactly what happened. The Bray Wyatt thing, I mean, and the Rusev thing, I expected it. It was part of the story. I could see where it was going. The Bray Wyatt thing still just puzzles me. Cena now, he's sort of on his way out. Well, not so much out. I mean, that's not the right word. But he's on his way down, right? He's on the descent. And so him losing to Nakamura would be a big sign, I think, of the kind of faith they have in him. The fact that, you know, Nakamura gets a big win over John Cena at WrestleMania, I think would be big. It doesn't do anything to hurt John Cena. John Cena at this point is bulletproof. There really is not much they could do to him that would hurt him. He's in a very unique position that not a lot of guys are in. But I don't think you could go wrong with either match. I think either of those matches are WrestleMania worthy. But the one I want is AJ Styles. Clement from London recently started listening to the podcast. Really good stuff. My question is, do you think Brock Lesnar ending the streak had been worth it up to this point? Also, I liked your idea about The Shield beating Undertaker. That would have been better. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I think they've done a great job overall making Lesnar into the, you know, the monster that they wanted him to be since he broke the streak. I mean, I guess they killed off a little bit of that aura with that loss to Goldberg last year in 90 seconds. But up until that point, they protected him more than anybody else in that company. And if you're going to beat the streak, then that's the way to do it. You want to make sure that person is protected. Colin from Ireland, watching the Edge collection on WWE Network, I believe Edge had the perfect career. He started young and excelled at every level, never advancing before he or the fans were ready for it. Started in a tag team, then moved to... Actually, he started as a single. But I see your point. Started in a tag team, moved to the mid and upper card before he got his well-deserved main event push, and most importantly, retired before he was 40. And went into the Hall of Fame in relatively good condition. Older stars like Bret and Shawn were similarly booked, and a lot of today's stars would have benefited greatly from the, quote, Edge push. Obviously, exceptions must be made for the Kurt Angles, Rocks, and Brock Lesnars of the world, but should WWE use Edge's rise as the blueprint of how to book future stars? Should management and talent be aiming for earlier retirement? And do you think Edge had the perfect career? I don't think you can say somebody who lost over a year of their career to spinal fusion surgery had the perfect career, so no. I get your point. I see what you're saying. But I also don't think management would ever advocate for early retirement, right? That's kind of a pipe dream right there. Especially somebody like Edge. Don't think that they would not have loved to keep him around for at least another 5 years if he was healthy. And Edge was forced into retirement when he was still... on top. I mean, he literally retired as the world champion. Not very many people do that. So he was still on top. He was still making good money, I'm sure. And, you know, Edge has claimed that he was going to retire anyway. He had this plan in his head to maybe lose to Christian the year after that at WrestleMania, and that was going to be it for him. But, you know, I mean, we hear that from a lot of guys, and it's hard. It's hard to give up that kind of money. I mean, shit, if I was making high six figures or low seven figures... and I was still a relatively young guy, and I was like, okay, I'm going to just retire. Would I be able to do that? Probably not. I'd probably talk it into myself. You know what? I could go another year. I could go another 2 years. Look at Mark Henry. And Mark Henry's had his fair share of injuries, and he's not exactly a featured performer anymore. And how many times have we heard, a couple of times that we've heard Mark Henry talk about, the end of this contract is going to be it. Vince always talks me into a new deal, but I'm not doing it. I'm done. And he's still around, right? I laughed at all this talk about Big Show. The Battle Royal at WrestleMania is going to be it for him. It's like, really? Really? And of course, it's not. You know, we just saw him on TV this week beating Curt Hawkins in a match. Big Show's not going anywhere. I mean, his contract runs through next year anyway. And even then, I'm skeptical that Big Show is just going to end his career. Would not at all be surprised if he negotiated a deal where maybe he had fewer dates, but I am skeptical at best that even 2018 will be the end of Big Show's career. And Big Show's also been asked that question before. The last contract he signed. Why are you still doing this? For the money. These guys are making good money. It would be hard for almost anyone listening to this to turn down that kind of money if they can still go. So, you know, I doubt very many of them would voluntarily walk away from making that kind of money if they felt they had years left to go. Edge didn't have a choice in the matter. He was forced into it. Brandon from Ontario, Canada. I was wondering if The Undertaker was not injured in September of 1999, what would have been the plan for him? Well, who would have his opponent been at WrestleMania 16? Big Show, maybe, because they were teaming before he left. And also, would he have still changed into the American Badass or stayed as the Dead Man? Brandon, there have been so many stories about what was planned for that WrestleMania. You know, I can't keep track of all of them. You ask four different people, you'll get four different answers. My understanding is that the plan was for Stone Cold against The Rock for the championship, with Rock winning. I remember hearing one version where Austin was going to be the heel going into that match. And then Undertaker and Big Show would make sense, as you said, because they were doing the Unholy Alliance thing as a tag team in late 99. You know they would have split at some point. It would have led to a match. And I think it probably would have been at WrestleMania. Right? Or better yet, imagine, if you will, for a second. Imagine if that four-way WrestleMania main event, instead of having Foley and Big Show, imagine if it was Stone Cold, The Rock, The Undertaker, and Triple H in that elimination match. And then it comes down to Stone Cold and The Rock at the end. That would have been pretty badass. Blake from Alabama. I was wondering what your most anticlimactic moment in wrestling as a kid was. Mine had to be when Kane unmasked for the first time. I remember watching it, expecting his face to be scarred and deformed, and all I got was some random dude in a mask with black stuff on his face. As a kid. I mean, I could tell you one from when I was a little bit older. I mean, the Higher Power reveal on Raw back in 99. I mean, I remember the rumors leading up to that. It was just out of control. Even then, like on the internet, whatever version of the internet existed back then, like the wrestling community that you find online. I mean, the rumors were just out of control. Jake the Snake, his name was floated. Ted DiBiase's name was floated. And so I start to get my hopes up, like, oh, that'd be cool to see one of them come back. Ted DiBiase helped bring The Undertaker in, right, in storyline. So when Vince McMahon pulled the hood off and he revealed himself to be the Higher Power, it was a huge letdown. I remember watching that live and thinking, like, ugh. Now, it did lead to Steve Austin being named the new CEO, which led to some pretty fun segments on TV at Titan Tower, but I remember that being a big letdown. Now, I know Bruce Pritchard, on one of his podcasts, claimed that Vince Russo's idea for the Higher Power was to use Christopher Daniels. You kind of forget that Daniels has been around for a long time. He I think, made his debut back in like the mid-90s. And he was a relative unknown at that time. I don't know how Russo would have known him, but supposedly the idea from Russo's end was to have Chris Daniels be brought in as the benefactor, as the Higher Power. And, you know, Daniels is great and all, but I don't think that would have worked. And what a weird idea, right? Ed Ferrara backed that up. He said the same thing a few years ago. He mentioned it was supposed to be Chris Daniels, but Vince McMahon nixed it because he thought he was too small for the role. Probably for the best. I think the younger me from 1999 would have been just as disappointed, if not more so. But I'm trying to think, you know, anticlimactic from when I was a kid. I don't know. I mean, maybe the gobbledygooker reveal, right? They built that thing up too. Who's inside the egg? And then we all know what happened there. I actually, and this is just me, I also remember being really disappointed at WrestleMania 10 when they did the special referee deal for the two championship matches. One of the referees was Mr. Perfect, and that was cool. We hadn't seen Mr. Perfect probably in Mr. Perfect would have left in late 93. He walked out. Yeah, he wasn't gone for that. He was gone for maybe like 6 or 7 months. But he was one of the special guest referees, and then there was going to be another guest referee for the final match of the night. It was going to be Bret Hart against Yokozuna, and I'm thinking, it's going to be Hulk Hogan. It has to be. How could it not? It's the WrestleMania main event. Hogan has been in practically every single, if not every single, WrestleMania main event up to that show. This was the first one Hogan was not in any way, shape, or form a part of the WrestleMania main event. So I'm thinking, it's Hogan, it's Hogan, Hogan's coming back. And then it turned out to be Roddy Piper. And I remember being really disappointed by that. It's like, how can you do WrestleMania 10 back at Madison Square Garden and not have Hogan? Hogan had not yet gone to WCW. He was just missing, you know, and he was available. And I mean, I guess he would have been probably doing that Thunder in Paradise show at the time. But everything, the stage was set to think it's going to be Hogan, and then it wasn't. So you can throw that one in there too. Jason from Greensboro, North Carolina, buy or sell, 1992 and 1998 had the best of both worlds with WCW and WWF. Buy or sell, WCW and WWF in 1992, or WCW and WWF in 1998. Ooh, that's a good one. You guys know my love for 1992 WWF. I have a soft spot for that year. It's one of my favorites. But 1992, you know, also had those Sting Vader matches, the best war games ever. But, you know, man, 98 had a lot of good stuff. You know, the back and forth between the two companies. I don't think newer fans can really appreciate how fun it was to be a wrestling fan back then. Not that everything on TV was always so great. There was a lot of very entertaining, very fun things that happened on TV, but it was the competition. It was who's going to jump ship, who's going to go from WCW to WWE, who's going to go from WWE to WCW, who's in the limbo, who's the newest member of the NWO, what's going to happen next in the next chapter of Austin against McMahon. Like, it was just a lot of fun. And you had the rise of Austin versus McMahon. You had the rise of The Rock as a heel. You had, in my opinion, the best incarnation of DX from 98. That was the one with Triple H and Chyna and X-Pac and the Outlaws. The Highway to Hell build for SummerSlam that year. WCW, you had the rise of Goldberg, who is as hot a new star to hit the scene as there's ever been in wrestling. Go back and watch some of those Goldberg matches, those Goldberg pops. I still get goosebumps when I think of that spear to Raven in that U.S. title match they had on Nitro, the way the crowd just, like, in unison rises to its feet. This guy was just so freaking popular back then. And, you know, Goldberg beating Hogan at the Georgia Dome, the Booker T. Benoit best of seven, I'm pretty sure was from 98, DDP, the NWO. I mean, I got to buy on 98. I have to sell on 92. It kills me to do that, but in terms of the best of both worlds, I got to buy in 1998. One more buy or sell here, and boy, this is another tough one. Travis from Meadville, Pennsylvania. Buy or sell on the biggest WrestleMania match that never happened. Sting against The Undertaker or John Cena against The Undertaker? And the condition is that the streak would still be alive for both matches. Whew, that is a tough one. That, I mean, I have at different points pitched both of those matches in the past. I probably pitched the Cena one the loudest. I felt and still feel that John Cena and The Undertaker, while The Undertaker still had the streak, was the biggest WrestleMania match they could have done for The Undertaker. Because more so then than now. Now it's kind of gone to Roman Reigns now, but back then, it was like John Cena would get booed. People were sick of seeing him. Super Cena, he always wins. And I would not have had Cena beat The Undertaker. I would have had Taker win in the end. But I think the drama of people thinking legitimately in their mind, believing that, of course, they're going to have John Cena win. Of course they are. Every near fall in that match, every big move, every crawl over for a cover, it would have been unbelievable. It would have had every single fan, whether you love Cena or hate him, on the edge of their seat. That's where the drama of that match would have come. And I think it also might have been a good match. I mean, this would have been years ago that they would have had to have done it. Undertaker was in better shape physically than I'm sure he is now. I think it would have been a great match. But then you have the Sting match, right? This was always this mythical thing, and I don't remember exactly when it started, because I don't remember there being this great clamoring back, you know, in the late 90s or the early 2000s to see Sting and The Undertaker at WrestleMania, even though they had dark gimmicks, you know? It started, I don't know exactly what year, if it was 2011 maybe, is when that's when it really started. There was a lapse, I think, in Sting's contract, or his contract with TNA was coming due, and he was at a crossroads. He didn't know if he was going to re-sign or not, and there was a lot. The fans started the rumors. When they started airing those vignettes that they filmed of The Undertaker, or someone who looked like The Undertaker, kind of walking into a shack in the woods and the rain is falling. Remember that whole thing? It blew up. It blew up into somehow Sting is coming in and he's going to challenge The Undertaker at WrestleMania. To the point where I remember reading that WWE reached out to Sting. They actually established communication to find out, are you free? Are you interested? And whatever happened, it didn't come to pass. Because that would have been the time to do it. That would have been WrestleMania 27. Although I don't know that Triple H would have, you know, I don't know that Triple H would have gladly given up his spot at WrestleMania against The Undertaker to have Sting come in and take it away from him. But the streak being what it was, do Undertaker and Sting, yeah, I mean, that would have been a huge match too. My whole play for the match always was after the streak ended, you could do Undertaker and Sting in a double retirement match where, you know, going in, both guys are talking about how it's their final journey. This is it. It's going to be their last match. And so you, right off the bat, you know that this is the only time you're ever going to get to see these two guys wrestle because it's their last match. And then there's the question of who wins and who loses, because a lot of people probably can't fathom the idea that Sting is going to go out there and lose in his final match, his one WWE match, he's going to lose. But people also can't fathom The Undertaker losing to, you know, the WCW guy. So I think it would have been pretty obvious Undertaker was going to win. But you play it up as who wins and who loses, because both guys are going home. And I think Undertaker wins, and they can both kind of embrace and show respect to each other when the match is over, and then they can both walk out. I think that would have been a pretty cool moment. And, you know, how good would the match have been? I don't think the match had a prayer in hell of living up to all the hype around it. So the build-up, the promo package, the entrances, the stare-down, all of that probably would have been better than the actual match at that point. But it would have been a spectacle, you know, it would have gotten people, you know, interested in WrestleMania, that's for sure. So if I have to pick one, if I have to buy on one, man, that's so tough. The bigger WrestleMania match that never happened, I gotta say Sting. It really is. I mean, it's this match that people just wanted to see because it's the WWF guy against the WCW guy. I still think there's some of that, even though WCW's been dead and buried for frickin' 15 or 16 years now. It's a match we've never seen before. We have seen Cena Undertaker before. Now, granted, it was many years ago. You can't say it's never happened, though, because that's not true. Sting and Undertaker, I think they actually did wrestle each other, but this was back in, like, the late 80s, early 90s in WCW. Unless I'm thinking of Kane, because I know Kane had a match with Sting back when he was, he would have been like Master Blaster or Unabomb or something like that. So I'm going to buy on Undertaker and Sting. I just think for the build-up to the match and everything else, it would have been a huge attraction. I don't think it would have been as good of a match as Undertaker against Cena would have been in the ring and with the near falls and everything. But in terms of big WrestleMania match, I got to go Undertaker Sting. I really do. And I also think, by the way, that there would have been some lapsed fans who would have been interested in coming back and watching that WrestleMania had they done that match. I think you actually, for one night at least, could have brought people, you know, gotten them interested enough and brought them back into where, wow, Sting is going to wrestle The Undertaker. I have to watch this. So I think it would have had broad appeal to a lot of different wrestling fans, including people who aren't really fans anymore. Undertaker and Cena is not going to appeal to those people. It's going to appeal to the current audience, but it's not going to mean anything to anybody outside of the current audience. All right. That was a long-winded answer to a tough question. I like it when you send me those tough ones, but either one of those matches. You know, it's hard to believe if this is it for The Undertaker. I guess there's always the chance that he could do one more, and that'll be the Cena one, but I don't see that happening. The idea that they, at different points, could have done both of those matches, and they did not pull the trigger. Even this year, supposedly the plan was Undertaker and Cena, and then Vince changed his mind. And they had that small window where they could have done Undertaker and Sting. Sting wanted that match so badly, and they didn't do it. It's frustrating to think. It really is frustrating to think, because at least one of those matches should have happened at WrestleMania. It's kind of a crime that it didn't. Subscribe to the official Solid Monster Sounds Off YouTube channel, even if I do end up making next to nothing off it from now on. I don't know what's going to happen with YouTube, but I'll still be on there regardless. You can still donate by PayPal, you can still use our Audible link, or buy a t-shirt. Lots of ways to support the podcast in spite of YouTube's best efforts to apparently cleanse the world of all this filthy wrestling content. Follow me on Twitter at Solomonster is my handle on there. We will be back next weekend with a brand new podcast on our March to 500, episode 492. Oh, 92. 492 is coming up next week, and I hope everybody has a great Easter Sunday. Have yourselves a fantastic week, and we will see you back here next weekend for a brand new Sound Off. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster Sounds Off.
If we get another John Cena versus Randy Orton match, so help me God, I will put a voodoo curse on everybody in that company. Think I'm joking? Just try me. I have my little voodoo doll I bought when I was in New Orleans for WrestleMania. I'm looking at it right now across the room. It's right over there. It's got a white pin for good luck and a black pin for evil. Don't make me go black on your ass.
Since 2007, the Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.